I've previously discussed this widespread epidemic we are experiencing called SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. For those of you unfamiliar with this condition, it is the situation that has developed in millions of people, not from a virus or exposures to other people, but from numerous factors in modern life, but especially overexposure to antibiotics, food additives, herbicides, and prescription drugs. Exposure to these factors has resulted in the loss of literally hundreds of microbial species in our gastrointestinal microbiomes, that is, the trillions of microbes dwelling in our GI tracts. These microbes help suppress the proliferation of unhealthy, mostly fecal, microbial species. But in an astounding number of people, these unhealthy fecal species have not only proliferated, but also ascended up to 24 feet of small intestine where they don't belong. This can be experienced in a variety of ways that includes food intolerances, unexplained bloating and diarrhea, irritable bowel syndrome, or even skin rashes, depression, anxiety, weight gain, and numerous other health conditions. So in this episode of Defiant Health, let's talk about the choices you have for pushing back this common situation to regain control over health and reduce or reverse numerous health conditions, even if your doctor knows nothing about this problem. Later in the podcast, let's talk about Defiant Health's sponsor, Paleo Valley. Their fermented grass-fed beef sticks, bone broth protein rich in collagen, organic super greens, and low-carb superfood bars are wonderful additions to your healthy lifestyle. They are also expanding their Wild Pastures service that delivers 100% grass-fed and finished pastured meats from a regenerative family farm right to your door. And look for their interesting new products such as chocolate-flavored grass-fed bone broth protein, grass-fed organ complex in capsule form, and essential electrolytes to add to your intake of electrolytes such as magnesium. I'd also like to introduce Defiant Health's newest sponsor, Cutting Edge Cultures, a source for excellent starter cultures to create your own fermented foods. For those of you who want to be more confident in making your own fermented vegetables, yogurts, and kefirs, Cutting Edge Cultures provides convenient starter cultures that begin with specific beneficial microbes while also making the process faster, meaning you will create healthy fermented foods typically within 48 hours or so, depending on what you're fermenting. I'll tell you more about their terrific products later in the podcast. So SIBO is this exceptionally common situation in which we've lost numerous healthy gut microbes due to exposure to antibiotics, herbicide and pesticide residues, other drugs like stomach acid blocking drugs, and a long list of other factors. We've lost hundreds of microbes, hundreds of microbial species. And those microbial species help suppress the proliferation of unhealthy species. These are species like E. coli and Salmonella and Campylobacter. These are fecal microbes. You may recognize some of these names because they're also the species of food poisoning. So very toxic species proliferate when we've lost those healthy microbes that were suppressing them. Well, when these fecal microbes proliferate, they have the opportunity to ascend into the 24 feet of small intestine, up into the ileum and the jejunum, duodenum, and even the stomach and esophagus. So it all adds up to 30 feet, 24 feet of small intestine, 4 to 5 feet of colon or large bowel, 30 feet of microbes in places where they don't belong. Now, the colon is well suited to housing fecal microbes. It has a thick 2-layer mucus barrier to separate microbes and food components from the intestinal wall because microbial components can be very toxic. Well, when these fecal microbes ascend into the small intestine is not well equipped to deal with this. It has a single layer mucus barrier, thinner single layer mucus barrier. And when fecal microbes ascend into the 24 feet of small intestine, they live and die in the space of a few hours, right? They don't live decades. They live only a few hours. And so there's a huge turnover, minute to minute, of trillions of microbes. And when they die, they release some of their components, but specifically some of the components of their cell walls. The most concerning component is something called endotoxin. So when fecal microbes die, they release their endotoxin, and the endotoxin is able to cross into the bloodstream through the intestinal wall. Now, this becomes especially true in the small intestine, where there's a single layer of mucus barrier, and when the microbes themselves contact the intestinal wall because of that thinned barrier, it inflames the intestinal wall, making it even more permeable to this endotoxin. So endotoxin from fecal microbes in the small bowel penetrate, get access to the bloodstream, where it is very inflammatory and has a whole long list of consequences. This is how microbes living in the 30 feet of gastrointestinal tract are able to export their effects to other places in the body. It can export these effects to the brain, where you can experience it as sleep disruption, depression, anxiety and panic attacks, cognitive impairment, Parkinson's disease. You can experience it in the skin as rosacea, or psoriasis or eczema. You can experience it as a metabolic condition like high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes or weight gain and obesity. You can experience it in joints and muscle as fibromyalgia or rheumatoid arthritis. In other words, the microbes in the GI tract can be responsible for initiating or worsening hundreds of common health conditions. So you can imagine if you have, say, something as common as type 2 diabetes or obesity, and you're given a drug for these things. Let's say you're given metformin or injectable drugs for your high blood sugar in type 2 diabetes. This has no effect on the 30 feet of microbes that are causing the problem, that are at least contributing to the problem. So you cannot have a full solution to any health problem unless you address the microbiome, that is the SIBO, the small intestinal bacterial overgrowth of fecal microbes, and the endotoxemia, the entry of endotoxin into the bloodstream that exports the effects of a disrupted and proliferated microbiome to other parts of the body. Now, this problem of SIBO has been recognized for at least 30 years. It's been documented in numerous clinical studies, though it hasn't really achieved mainstream consciousness. But it really gained momentum in 2007 when a European group documented the fact that increased intestinal permeability that increases endotoxemia is a real thing. And it drives, in the initial studies, insulin resistance. That is, so SIBO, endotoxemia, increased insulin resistance. Now, recall that insulin resistance is the fundamental underlying process that leads to type 2 diabetes, coronary disease, heart disease, dementia, cognitive decline, cancers, weight gain. In other words, insulin resistance is the underlying process for numerous common modern health conditions. It's also become clear that SIBO and endotoxemia are exceptionally common. All we have to do is look at the dozens of studies that looked at this question. If you have condition X, fill in the blank, what proportion of people test positive for SIBO? This is typically documented by doing something called hydrogen gas breath testing in a clinic or lab, or endoscopy, where a sample of the duodenal liquid or upper jejunal liquid is obtained and looked at for microbes. So in condition X, fill in the blank, what proportion of people test positive for SIBO by these methods? So let's take fatty liver. So we know that 50%, an astounding 50% of the U.S. population has fatty liver. That is, they have fat infiltration in the liver, as evidenced by an increase in blood tests like AST and ALT, or ultrasound or MRI or CAT scan of the liver showing fat infiltration. And this, of course, over time can lead to cirrhosis, which is a very bad condition to have. You get very sick and you can die of liver failure. So having fatty liver that can lead to cirrhosis is very important. And 50% of the U.S. population has fatty liver. So if there's 330 million people in the U.S. and half have fatty liver, that's about 160 million people, right? Well, the studies are quite confident in that people who have fatty liver, 50% test positive for SIBO. Well, that's about 80 million people right there, just with that condition alone. How about people with irritable bowel syndrome or IBS? There are 60 to 70 million Americans with IBS. And while the results vary from study to study depending on the method used, about 40% of people with IBS test positive for SIBO. Well, 40% of 60 to 70 million people is about 24 plus million people. So add that to the list. Throw in all the people with fibromyalgia, restless leg syndrome, autoimmune diseases, neurodegenerative disorders, and you easily exceed 150 million people, or approximately 50% of the U.S. population. Now, surely there's overlap. There are people who are obese, type 2 diabetics with fatty liver. But if you look at all the conditions that have been associated with SIBO, you see that this is not a rare condition. When I first started considering all this, I remained skeptical until the AIR device came out, the AIRE AIR device from a company called Food Marble that was invented to test for hydrogen gas on the breath, just like you do in a clinic or lab. But it's a consumer device you can use in the comfort of your kitchen. You blow into it and it reflects how much hydrogen gas you're producing because microbes produce hydrogen gas, but you cannot. Now, this device can be used to map if you use timing. That is, you ingest something that microbes consume, something like inulin powder, say, in your coffee. And you can time when you start to produce hydrogen gas. Because if you produce hydrogen gas 90 minutes later after consumption, that's normal. Because that's from fermentation. The hydrogen gas is from fermentation in the colon where it's supposed to occur. But if you produce hydrogen gas as detected by the AIR device before 90 minutes, say at 30 minutes, it means that microbes are living in the upper GI tract, in the stomach, for instance, or duodenum or jejunum, where they're not supposed to be. And that's indicative of SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And when I started talking about the use of this device, and a lot of the people who follow my conversation started testing themselves, it was shocking at the number of people who were testing positive. It was the exceptional person who tested negative. Now, you might say, well, maybe the device is flawed. Maybe the concept is flawed. Except that what I saw was people who tested positive and then took steps to test negative. And you can test negative by taking several steps. Health problems reversed with the reversal of the presumptive SIBO. For instance, people said things like this: I lost 57 pounds on your program, but I'm stalled now. I have 35 pounds more to lose, and I can't lose. I'm stuck. I corrected my SIBO by hydrogen gas measurement, and I finally lost the 35 pounds. Or someone who was a type 2 diabetic who had a hemoglobin A1C, say, of a terrible level, let's say 11.7%. They do the program, my basic program. They say, my hemoglobin A1C dropped from 11.7% to 6.1%. So dramatic improvement, but still short of perfect. All the problems associated with diabetes and blood sugar go away when you achieve a hemoglobin A1C of 5.0% or less. And these people were stuck. So they corrected their SIBO, as evidenced by high hydrogen gas breath levels, and their hemoglobin A1C dropped to, say, 4.7%, ideal. So over and over again, I saw residual or persistent health problems dissolve with correction of the SIBO as evidenced by hydrogen gas measurement. So you can know you have SIBO by doing hydrogen gas breath testing in a lab or clinic, or by the AIR device in your home, or rarely when an endoscopy, upper endoscopy is performed and a duodenal or upper jejunal aspirate or a liquid sample is obtained and looked at for microbes. But you really don't have to do that kind of testing. It's helpful to have the AIR device, but you don't have to get the AIR device to know that you have SIBO. You can also look at some other indicators, what I call telltale signs of SIBO. One sign would be food intolerances. You know, your great-grandmother did not know about any food intolerances. There was no such thing to speak of except for rare allergies. But in the modern world, there are people who are intolerant to long lists of food. I talk to people who say, I can only eat from this list of 10 foods, and all other foods cause headache, diarrhea, bloating, or other kind of a reaction. This is evidence of SIBO, whether we label it as nightshade intolerance, FODMAPs intolerance, histamine-containing food intolerance, legume intolerance, fructose and fruit intolerance, or whatever label you want, even blood testing for IgG levels. These are all indicators of SIBO. If you have fat malabsorption, that is, after a bowel movement, you see fat droplets, as if you poured some olive oil into your toilet. Of course, you did not. If you see fat droplets floating in the toilet, that is indicative of fat malabsorption. It tells you that there are microbes in the duodenum. that are blocking the activity of pancreatic enzymes, and you're therefore not digesting fat, and you're seeing fat droplets or fat staining where the water meets porcelain. You can see discoloration at the edge. Then there are health conditions that are so commonly, so likely to be associated with SIBO that if you have these conditions, you can safely assume that you have SIBO. Fibromyalgia is extremely highly likely to be associated with SIBO. Irritable bowel syndrome, very likely. Obesity, type 2 diabetes, an autoimmune condition, a neurodegenerative condition, fatty liver. Now, can you have SIBO with no symptoms or maybe some minor bloating, say? Yes, you can. Shockingly, in all the studies done to document the proportion of people with condition X, right, fill in the blank, who test positive for SIBO, the healthy controls, the so-called healthy controls, a surprising number of people in the healthy control group test positive. It varies from a few percent to as much as 40% test positive for SIBO and the presumptive healthy controls. So bottom line, SIBO is not rare. It is extremely common. And it's also unwise to ignore it. So if you say, this is too complicated, this is too scary, I feel fine, or I just have just minor symptoms like occasional diarrhea or bloating, can I just ignore it? Well, that's unwise. What are the consequences of ignoring SIBO? Well, it may take months or years for these kinds of manifestations or experiences to unfold, but it can lead to weight gain, especially in abdominal visceral fat, higher blood sugars, higher blood pressure, coronary disease, autoimmune diseases, neurodegenerative disorders that include cognitive impairment, depression, anxiety, Parkinson's disease, diverticular disease, colon cancer. In other words, it's very unwise to ignore this situation, even if you're only having minor symptoms. So if you think you have SIBO because you tested positive by hydrogen gas testing in the breath, or you have some kind of symptom or condition that suggests SIBO, what can you do about it? The Defiant Health Podcast is sponsored by Paleo Valley, makers of delicious grass-fed beef sticks, healthy snack bars, and other products. We are very picky around here and insist that any product we consider has no junk ingredients like maltodextrin, carrageenan, carboxymethylcellulose, sucralose, and of course, no added sugars. And all Paleo Valley products contain no gluten nor grains. In fact, I find Paleo Valley products among the cleanest of any in their category, and they're truly delicious. One of the habits I urge everyone to get into is to include a fermented food product at least once, if not several times per day, in their lifestyles. Unlike nearly all other beef sticks available, the Paleo Valley grass-fed beef sticks are all naturally fermented, meaning they contain probiotic bacterial species. And now, Paleo Valley is expanding their Wild Pastures program that provides 100% grass-fed, grass-finished, pastured beef and pastured chicken and pork, raised without herbicides or pesticides and raised in the USA. And they've just added wild-caught seafood caught from the waters of Bristol Bay, Alaska. They're now offering a 20% lifetime discount on every order for a limited time. I'll post the web address in the Defiant Health show notes. Shipping for Paleo Valley products is free for orders of $75 or more. For more information or to order, go to paleovalley.com. That's PaleoValley.com. Enter the coupon code DEFIANT, not case sensitive, for a 15% discount to Defiant Health listeners. The web address is also listed in the Defiant Health show notes that accompany this podcast. And be sure to take a look at their other products, such as their organic super greens, rich with phytonutrients, and their superfood bars that come in dark chocolate chip, apple cinnamon, and lemon meringue. They're low carb, of course, with 8 grams net carbs per bar. The folks at Paleo Valley have lately been busy, recently adding some interesting new products, including pasture-raised, fermented pork steaks, chocolate-flavored grass-fed bone broth protein, grass-fed organ complex in capsule form, pumpkin spice superfood bars with grass-fed bone broth protein, and new essential electrolytes in powder form to add to the potassium and magnesium intake of your lifestyle, available in orange, lemon, and melon flavors. And for listeners to the Defiant Health Podcast, you can apply your discount code for a 15% discount. The discount code can be found in the show notes. I'd like to also introduce you to Defiant Health's newest sponsor, Cutting Edge Cultures, who provides a variety of high-quality starter cultures for your fermenting projects. Including several servings of fermented foods in your daily routine is among the most important practices you can adopt to maintain or restore the health of your gastrointestinal microbiome. Cutting Edge Cultures makes it easy with starter cultures for culturing vegetables with their Culture Veggie Starter, yogurt with the Yogurt Plus Starter, and kefir with Easy Kefir Starter. They've also added LR Superfood Starter to cultivate one of my favorite microbes, Lactobacillus reuteri, and L-Gasseri Superfood Starter to grow Lactobacillus gasseri, both extremely important gut microbes lost by modern people. They also have a convenient prebiotic powder called Prebio Plus that makes it easy to add important prebiotic fibers to coffee, yogurt, or other foods. And you've got to try their Kefir Soda Starter that makes an effervescent soda-like drink filled with healthy probiotic species. Go to Cutting Edge Cultures website to enter the discount code DEFIANT, not case sensitive, for a 15% discount for Defiant Health listeners. Web address and show notes. Using Cutting Edge Cultures not only allows you to pick and choose some of the microbes you ferment, but also saves time by cutting back on the amount of time required to ferment your foods. So if you have SIBO, if you believe you have SIBO, or you test positive by some method, such as breath hydrogen gas by the air device, what choices do you have to push back this abnormal proliferation of fecal microbes in all 30 feet of your GI tract? Well, there are several. If you go to your gastroenterologist or your primary care doctor, sadly, most will say things. If you said, for instance, I think I have SIBO, and I think that my weight gain or difficulty losing weight, or my high blood sugar, or my atrial fibrillation, or my ulcerative colitis, or my irritable bowel syndrome, or my depression, or my panic attacks are due to SIBO and endotoxemia, most doctors will dismiss it and say, there's nothing wrong with you, or did you consult Dr. Google again, or otherwise just dismiss this because it takes, sadly, at least a generation for practicing physicians to catch up to the science. The science is plentiful. It's abundant. There are literally thousands of studies documented. These are real phenomena plaguing modern people. Yet practicing physicians are way out of touch. And the other sad thing about this is that unless it involves a procedure or a prescription drug, most doctors do not become aware of a problem. So most doctors will not be helpful. Now, the occasional doctor who does know something about this will likely hand you a prescription for an antibiotic called Xifaxan or rifaximin. Well, there's some problems with this antibiotic. One, its efficacy is only about 50 to 60%. It's not all that effective. It can work, but it's often ineffective. It's fairly costly. It's about $1,200, typically not covered by insurance. And the conversation your doctor provides typically does not tell you how you got SIBO, what steps you can take to increase the efficacy from 50 to 60%, what steps you can take to avoid the common recurrences. Because typically the doctor just hands you a prescription for that antibiotic, but doesn't really understand what it is you're going through. And so it's not a very satisfactory situation. Maybe it'd be better in 10, 20, or 30 years, but you and I don't want to wait for that, right? There's also herbal antibiotics, that is, combinations of herbal preparations, other compounds that have antibacterial effects. Now, the problem with that is there's plenty of products that claim to have effects against SIBO and its cousin, SIFO, small intestinal fungal overgrowth, which is another conversation we should have. But most of them have not been validated in human clinical trials, and so we don't know if they work. There have been two regimens, however, of herbal antibiotics that have been undergone some validation. One regimen is the Candibactin AR and Candibactin BR. Another one is the FC-Cidal and Dysbiocide. And I'll list these in the show notes below. These two regimens were compared to Xifaxan or rifaximin and surprisingly proved to be superior. In fact, the people who did not respond to rifaximin responded. Most of them responded to the herbal antibiotics. I've used both of these regimens in a number of people, and I'm convinced they do indeed work quite well for a two-week course. They do have some side effects such as bloating and diarrhea, but for the most part, they're fairly benign, and they do work, I believe. But let me introduce an entirely new concept that I think you'll find very interesting because it's very benign, it's easy, and it involves the restoration of what are called keystone microbes. In other words, these are microbes that are supposed to be in the human gastrointestinal microbiome, but we've lost. And there are several species and strains in particular that I think are very important that when restored, give you the capacity to reverse SIBO and also to prevent the common recurrences. So all this thinking got started by asking the question, if you have SIBO and thereby 30 feet of unhealthy microbes colonizing your entire GI tract, what would happen if you just took a commercial off-the-shelf probiotic? Would your SIBO go away? No, it would not. You might reduce some bloating or diarrhea, but you won't get rid of the hordes of bacteria colonizing your small intestine. So I asked another set of questions. What if we chose microbial species that are lacking from the modern human gastrointestinal microbiome and species that colonize the upper GI tract, the small intestine, because that's where SIBO occurs. That's where the battle occurs, right? And what if we chose species and strains that are known to produce what are called bacteriocins? Bacteriocins are potent antibiotics, natural antibiotics, produced by microbes, effective against the species of SIBO. So I chose three bacterial species. I chose a strain. Now, by the way, when we play with microbes, we have to be mindful to some degree of strain, because strain designations for various make a difference. So for instance, you and I have E. coli in our guts, but what if you ate food that was contaminated by cow manure and thereby E. coli, like lettuce? Well, you can die of that E. coli. Same species, E. coli, different strains. So strains can make a difference, even sometimes a life and death difference, sometimes no difference. So it varies with the microbe. But in this case, when we're playing with these microbes, we're going to use these strains that we know have these characteristics. So I chose a strain of Lactobacillus gasseri, the BNR17 strain. I'll list these below in the show notes. The BNR17 strain of gasseri, because gasseri is known to colonize the upper GI tract, the small intestine, and produce up to 7 bacteriocins. I chose a strain of Lactobacillus reuteri. Once again, colonizes the upper GI tract and produces up to 4 very potent bacteriocins. And then I also added Bacillus coagulans, a unique spore-forming microbe, because it has a good track record for reducing a lot of the symptoms of irritable bowel syndrome, which is virtually synonymous with SIBO and does produce 1 bacteriocin. And by the way, if you ferment gasseri and reuteri alone, it tends to generate a very sour-tasting yogurt. You add the Bacillus coagulans, and it kind of smooths it out, makes a much more tasty end product. So while it's optional, that last one, Bacillus coagulans, is the least important, it does add a better taste and texture to your final yogurt. Now, we also use my method of extended fermentation. Recall that microbes don't have sex, right? There's no male and female microbes. They reproduce via asexual, so-called asexual reproduction. One microbe becomes 2, 2 becomes 4. They recreate themselves. Well, reuteri, for instance, recreates itself or doubles every 3 hours at human body temperature. So if you did like they do in a factory that makes yogurt, you'll ferment for 4 to 6 hours. You have almost nothing in the way of microbial counts. We're going to ferment for 36 hours to allow a minimum of 12 doublings. Now, when you do that, you get much higher bacterial numbers. In this case, when we perform something called flow cytometry, it's a laser-assisted counting method for microbes, we get around 300 billion counts of microbes per half cup serving. In other words, this extended fermentation, unlike commercial fermentation, massively increases, about a 1,000-fold increase in microbial counts. Then we consume half a cup per day. Now, this is anecdote, but about 40 people who've done this and people who follow my programs, about 40 people who've done this, 90% have converted to hydrogen gas negative when using the mapping function on the AIR device. So that's not proof. We will pursue a formal clinical trial, but so far it has been working and it's been performing far beyond my expectations. Given the fact that Xifaxan is only 50 to 60% effective, I was expecting maybe a 30% success rate. I did not expect that the majority of people, about 90%, respond favorably. And you know what? If the solution to a problem is something really severe or invasive, like colon removal or surgery or exploratory laparotomy, you better be damn confident that you're on the right track, right? And that is truly necessary. But what if the solution is something akin to yogurt? Well, the hurdles are much lower. In other words, you could do this even if you're not entirely confident you have SIBO, because what you're really doing is restoring microbes that you should have had all along anyway. And by the way, for that reason, while I call it SIBO yogurt, and we do this for 4 weeks, and the majority of people normalize breath hydrogen gas, I think it's a good idea to continue it at least occasionally afterwards, maybe every third day or twice a week or something like that, because I think it prevents recurrences also, because we're seeing a major drop in recurrences in the people who have been doing this. And now, it is a bit of a hassle. You have to source 3 different microbes from 3 different sources, but you can make future batches from a little bit of the prior batch. Now, there's a shift in the relative counts of each microbe because they compete with each other. So I would suggest that when you're about 8, 9, or 10 batches in, that is making a subsequent batch from a little bit of the prior batch, start from scratch again from the probiotic preparations to ensure that you're getting a relative same number of microbes for each. Now, one caution when you do this: if you're using the AIR device to assess whether you respond or not, that is, let's say you start at a very high level after consuming a prebiotic fiber, let's say of 9.8, and then you want to see if you've normalized after 4 weeks of the SIBO yogurt, you have to stop the SIBO yogurt for a week and then test. And the reason for that is the Lactobacillus reuteri, because it colonizes the small intestine, the upper GI tract, also converts that prebiotic fiber to hydrogen gas, so it can give you the appearance of persistent SIBO, even though it's only due to Lactobacillus reuteri. So you don't have SIBO if you test positive with Lactobacillus reuteri. So you have to finish your 4 weeks of SIBO yogurt, stop it for a week, and then retest to see if you're hydrogen gas negative. I wish we didn't have that added complexity, but that's the way it is. Now, we plan to assess this in a formal clinical trial to prove that this is true. We won't do it as yogurt because home-produced yogurt is too variable. We will encapsulate it and then perform baseline hydrogen gas measurement on the breath and then follow up to validate whether or not this is true. But so far, it's held up so consistently that I'm pretty well convinced this is an effective way to deal with SIBO. And it's so soft and easy to do. The only ill effect is the die-off effect, which is shared by any method you use, whether it's Xifaxan or an herbal antibiotic or the SIBO yogurt. When you kill off fecal microbes, you can have effects like bloating or headache or a little bit of like a chill effect or even a feeling warm or anxious effects. These are all due to the die-off. That is, you're accelerating endotoxemia transiently by killing off trillions of fecal microbes. So know that that's an effect that reflects successful killing off of fecal microbes. You can blunt the effect. You can cut back on the amount of yogurt you're consuming, maybe to a quarter cup or a couple tablespoons at the start, so you don't get as much die-off. You'd also take something like activated charcoal. The easiest way to do that is 1,000 milligram capsules prior to eating the yogurt, and it will reduce the severity of the endotoxemia. It typically does not last more than a couple days, so it's a transient effect, but it reflects successful pushing back or killing of fecal microbes. So there you have it, a very benign, healthy, and tasty way to eradicate your SIBO. Now, if you've learned something from this episode of Defiant Health Podcast, I invite you to subscribe through your favorite podcast directory, post a review, post a comment, help us spread this word of self-empowerment in health, because people in healthcare, including doctors, are not doing their job. Thanks for listening.